Welcome to Conversations in MedEd, the people behind the research. Hi, everyone. I am joined today by Kaushala. Hi, Kaushala. Thanks Hello. For coming. Could you maybe tell our listeners who you are, what do you do, where are you based?
So my name is Kaushala Tilakasiri. I am an emergency physician at the moment by profession. I work in Sri Lanka, Colombo, at Colombo East Base Hospital as the consultant in charge of the department. And also I am the lead clinician for the National Simulation Center in Sri Lanka. And I'm currently working at the Ministry of Health. So I'm also an educator for simulation-based medical education, mostly related to emergency medicine. And I'm also the secretary of Sri Lanka College of Emergency Physicians. It's a voluntary service I do.
You sound incredibly busy. Right. So I've invited you on to chat today because you are the lead author on a paper on coloniality in simulation-based medical education. And you have sort of many different sim roles, and you've mentioned being an educator. And so I'm really curious, how does an emergency medicine physician get into simulation-based medical education? Like, what was your journey into MedEd?
So in my journey to becoming an emergency physician, the path to learning to become an emergency physician involves a lot of simulation-based education. So it is a very hands-on specialty, and it is performance-based assessment and performance-driven specialty. You can know a lot of theory, but if you cannot put it onto practice to the patient in front of you, it does not make sense. So we are taught, and the more simulation you do, the better emergency physician you would be. That is, it's how it is. And from around 2014, just after graduation, actually before graduation was when I was first exposed to simulation. I did an elective in Warwick University when I was a fourth year med student by choice on emergency medicine, when emergency medicine was not a specialty in Sri Lanka. And that was the first time I got exposed to this something called learning through simulation. So before, at that time, simulation was not available in Sri Lanka. And when I went to Warwick University to do my elective, I was put into a room and asked to treat a dummy, a plastic dummy, with other medical students. And they were treating this dummy. And I thought, oh, wow, this is amazing. This is a great way to learn. I would have treated a real patient, and the mistakes that you would not be doing, you are allowed to do, and you are allowed to learn from your mistakes. So that was the first time I got exposed to this. And then I was very curious to learn about it, even as a medical student. And then after graduation, I was very lucky to work with a research fellow from Oxford who was doing a certain research in Sri Lanka related to critical care. And then he started developing a program which involved simulation for interns, for people who are starting internship. So it was a peer learning opportunity. And then that one thing led to another. Yeah. So that's how I came into the field of medical education. And I firmly believe education is revolution. So that is where I am now.
Wow. Yeah. No, there's lots there to unpack. So I'm really curious about the, I suppose, the coloniality perspective, right? So you've mentioned coming to the UK and being exposed to sim. And why focus on coloniality? Do you feel like the simulation training you received in the UK was relevant to your Sri Lankan context? Do you, you know, why write this paper?
So this paper is a product of a very long journey of simulation and a brief exposure to the concept of coloniality and I mean, when you learn and read about coloniality and post-colonial studies, you know, the theories and all that, you do realize and it becomes very relatable.
Mm.
So why I wrote this paper was, it is a question still in my mind. I've written on the paper itself. This is not to give anybody answers or to firmly say that this is what it is. But it is more to ask the question, what is coloniality's role in simulation-based medical education? Mm. Because as I went through my journey of as a learner and then as an educator in simulation, I saw there was something missing. There was a gap. There was something was not right.
Mm.
And can coloniality explain that? Yeah. Is a question that I have. And to explore that question and to develop, to contribute to the intellectual debate is why I wrote this paper. I believe some of these disconnects or the gaps can be explained by coloniality, but it needs further research.
Sure, yeah. And what do you see as some of those gaps or tensions? So what do you see sort of getting lost in translation?
Yes, so I think the paper I wrote is structured into three sections of simulation where you talk about the design, preparation, and then the doing of the simulation, which includes pre-brief, scenario, and then the debrief. And then you have the evaluation component. So I've divided the discussion into that. So I will use that same structure. So when you talk about the design, the planning, it is based on theories that have been built on education, largely based on Western context, mm-hmm. high-income countries, like transformative learning, reflective learning, and then how that applies to Asian, South, post-colonial countries is yet a question. Mm-hmm. So when that design is en bloc implemented, does it serve the same purpose that it serves in high-income countries?
Yeah.
Is one of the things that I saw. And then when it comes to delivering, actual delivery, the frameworks that are used for delivery, for example, psychological safety, may not be the same that is considered in a high-income country. And then the evaluation process, which uses the yardsticks that fit to the purpose of high-income countries, like whether it meets the needs of patient safety and what is patient safety in a LMIC, and what requirement is there, as opposed to the same course when you produce it in the same degree of rigor in a LMIC, it may serve the purpose of producing the workforce that is standardized and needed for high-income countries,
yeah.
as opposed to meeting the needs of patient safety in an LMIC.
Yeah.
So that is some of the disconnects that I noticed.
Yeah. No, I mean, those are huge, and I agree. I think we can be very guilty of copy and pasting from one context into another, and that's just, you know, inappropriate, and it could be ineffective. And it's not, I think, to say you clearly believe in the value of simulation-based medical education. Like, you want to do it, but you want to do it in a way that's appropriate for your context. And I think that's really important.
Mm.
Any recommendations on how, for those who are involved in simulation-based med ed, what advice would you give them on maybe, you know, critically evaluating or reflecting on their own sim practices? You know, mm-hmm. what should they be thinking about? Mm-hmm. Any takeaways on what they could be doing potentially differently?
I think we shouldn't be in this idea that whatever comes from West is not suitable for us. That's not what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
We don't need to reinvent the wheel. We don't need to do that. That's not what I mean. And what is scientifically proven is proven. So it is proven that simulation works. So we don't need to ask that question anymore. It's there. It's there. The evidence is there. But be aware that there is a cultural context in this teaching methodology. You know, lecturing has been there since time of Plato, right? Simulation is a new entity, and actually medicine borrowed it from aviation industry. And borrowing it from aviation industry itself had its own issues. So likewise, borrowing it from high-income countries or West will have its own issues, right? So having insight to that itself, you're one step ahead. So when we are developing simulation, we need to see if it achieves our ground level needs. What it is going to achieve? That's what we should be focusing on, the learning objectives. If you are, you know, like any learning teaching program that you develop, your learning objectives, getting it right is what makes it work, right? Yeah. Same for simulation. And thinking it on your ground level context is what will make the difference from the evidence that I have at the moment, I can say.
No, it's ongoing work. I understand. None of us have all the answers, and we need to do research to add a little bit more to the puzzle that we are building. Do you have any examples of maybe like changes or adaptations you have made in your context that you can share with us to give us ideas about, you know, oh, I could maybe do that differently, whether it's using a different language or thinking about relationships, power dynamics, hierarchy?
Yes. Being a simulationist for about a year now, after my training in Oxford, I think I've changed myself. So changing yourself is the most important thing to change what you're doing. So I used to run the simulation and debrief the simulation completely in English before I went to Oxford.
Yeah.
When I was doing sim. But then after coming back, I've started to, during my pre-brief, I've started to tell my team, you can and should talk in native languages as you would do in your real setup.
Yes.
And you need to debrief at the end as you would do in your during your tea time.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about this. We had this patient and we did this and that. And then this went right, this went wrong. You know, you do that during your tea time talk.
Yeah.
Yeah, you do that here.
Yes.
So that's a change that I've made. And I've seen how it works. So it will need formal evaluation, but to firmly say one works as opposed to the other, but I've seen it working better, and especially with multi-professional simulation where doctors, nurses, lower grade staff also work together when they work in the native languages. For example, the advanced life support courses where we teach people how to give CPR, we used to teach them to stop and start CPR during the defibrillation, and that command was in English. But in our real context, the orderlies or the lower grade staff do not speak any English.
Yeah.
And they are the ones who actually give CPR.
Yes.
So what is the use of that language? And that's just one component of language. And then when I use mannequins, I tend to dress them up in local clothes.
Wow.
But the mannequins generally come as wearing a tracksuit, which our patients don't wear a tracksuit.
Yeah.
They'll wear a sarong and a shirt.
Yeah.
And I've tried to dress them up, and it immediately switches the realm and buy in the fiction contract.
Yes.
So these are very simple things.
Yes.
But to do them, you need to have insight that, is this my realm?
Yes.
So.
Yeah, I mean, there's just small but powerful changes. Like, I mean, even just what your mannequin's wearing is, and I'm assuming the mannequin doesn't even maybe look
Oh, like, no, they are white. Yeah, they're white.
So even there, you know, the sort of the fidelity or the authenticity of the learning experience is compromised. Mm. So you're making small changes, but it matters. And that is, yeah, fantastic advice. Maybe just in closing, do you have any other sort of takeaways or pieces of advice to give to, you know, simulationists, but even just people thinking about, oh, I've been guilty, I mean, myself included, of copying and pasting something from one context into my own without, you know, critical consideration. Any sort of take-home messages for our listeners?
Oh, I would say, yeah, copy and paste, but do it properly.
Or edit it along the way,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, and that's what I would say. It's not you're not copying and pasting. It's not you know, as I say, as you also have, you know, published in papers, it's not whether coloniality is good and bad. It's not black and white.
Yeah.
It's very gray.
Yeah.
And it's a context to understand and work on it, work yeah. around it. Work towards progress, but define your progress. Have your progress defined, not yeah. by somebody else's yardstick or the need.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree. Like, it's not a false binary, or like it's a spectrum, and we can't change the past.
Yes.
But we can reimagine what education can look like in the future, and at the heart of that, designing for your context is what we're advocating for. You know, like, you know, use tools developed if they're useful, if they're evidence based, but make sure that they are appropriate and authentic for your environment.
Yes.
Thank you so much for chatting today.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, me too.
I am Danica Sims, your host and producer. Thank you for joining Conversations in MedEd. Hit subscribe and leave a review. I love to hear from listeners, so if you have any comments or questions or recommended guests, please get in contact with me. Contact details can be found in the show notes. Are you passionate about education? Are you interested in conducting educational research? Are you considering obtaining a formal qualification in health professions education? The University of Oxford offers a part-time, two-year master's in medical education through the Department of Education in partnership with the medical school. We introduce students to numerous topics, theory, and evidence from the field, and support them in conducting their own educational research project. For more details, visit the Department of Education webpage. Links can be found in the show notes.